Hello and welcome to Film Stalker Film Club 2011 edition. This is the first one of 2011. We're going to talk about our favourite films of 2010. And I'm going to start off because I know what these two guys are expecting me to say. They're expecting me to list off a certain film in my top whatever, my first favourite film of 2010. And it's not going to be the one they expect.
I can guess okay, what it's going to be.
You two guys, tell me what you think is going to be my number one spot.
I'll kind of float three past you. It's either going to be, well, you told me it was your favourite film, which was Sex in the City 2, or Toy Story 3, or Inception, I would say.
All right, Stephen, what do you think they are?
I was hoping it would be Inception. it could be Toy Story 3, and I think you've chosen something different. I think it was a close call, and you've gone with what you don't think you'd have thought in the end. Because you can't really pick one favourite, so you've chose the other one rather than Inception.
Right, so I can tell you that my favourite film of 2010 was a clear favourite. There was no question. There was a question with a number two spot, and Toy Story 3 was not in one or two position, or even three. So in first place for 2010, my favourite film was The Town.
I thought that the other day. You might have said The Town, and I should have looked at good old Film Stalker before we came on again.
Yeah, you should have looked at Film Stalker, actually, because I raved about that film, and it still sticks in my mind. And I think I was just having a quick look over the review I did. And while it's one of the, I mean, I love thrillers. That's one of my favourite genres. And while that's an awesome thriller, there's something else about it as well, and it's the very fact that Ben Affleck wrote it, or co-wrote it, didn't he? Directed it and starred in it, and didn't turn out to be Ben Affleck.
Now, before you go on, I've not seen this, and of all the films I've not seen in 2010, 2010 was a year where I didn't see many films, this is one of the films I still want to see. Right. So there's going to be no giving away of stories tonight.
Okay,
that's fine.
So he doesn't get the sex change operation, and he doesn't go and become a call girl in Venezuela. Okay? That's that. Let's just get that straight right now. It doesn't happen. No, sorry, I won't spoil it for you. But I think what helped boost that up for me was the very fact that Ben Affleck did such an amazing job in the direction. And at the same time, was actually such a powerful, incredible actor in that lead role. And I just loved that thriller aspect. He did the thriller and the whole heist situation really well. Did you see it, Mark?
I have seen it, and it's in my top five. It's actually at number four.
Okay.
In my list of the year. And I'd second everything you say. I'm a big Ben Affleck fan anyway, whether he's playing Ben Affleck or not. Mainly because of his links to Kevin Smith and the stuff he's done in Chasing Amy and Dogma. And that's kind of where I've really kind of got into him. And I just think, you know, I thought Gone Baby Gone was just stunning.
Yeah.
And then I watched The Town and it just blew me away.
Yeah.
Absolutely blew me away. He's turned from somebody in, you know, with little credibility, I guess, into an amazing director, but also a fantastic actor. And as you say, you know, he's not playing Ben Affleck anymore. He's actually acting. And I thought, you know, for 2 odd hours or however long it was, it was just a stunning piece of film. Had me on the edge of my seat. Didn't know how it was going to go. I thought the casting was fantastic. And the storyline was just great.
Yeah. And I tried to think what if there was anything wrong with that film, and I really couldn't think of a thing. And there were just so many things that I really loved about it. One of the big areas that I really enjoyed was the way he built up the heist. There was no... You watch most heist films and it concentrates a lot on the planning. There's a lot of tension and suspense built out of that area of the film. And he didn't do that. He just went straight into the events and pulled us along with him. It was excellent. And at the same time, didn't get caught up in all that side of the story, but really kept it focused on the characters and that key relationship. Yeah, brilliant stuff. That was my number one.
No, great film. Mm. Great film.
Okay, Stephen, this is going to be interesting. I know you don't watch a lot of the mainstream films that we do, and you pave your own way in the cinema audiences, shall we say. So what was your top film of 2010?
My top film of 2010 was The White Ribbon. I don't know, Michael Haneke.
Mm.
Michael Haneke. It was actually, I mean, it's one of those, when you pick a film of a year, you always find that the release borderline, this was released on the 30th of December, 2009.
Yeah.
It's going back a long way, and it was out way before then. I think it was September it was released worldwide. We didn't get it until 2010. It's typical of his work and not typical of his work. I mean, he's generally all middle, upper-class families he deals with and making it. I mean, it's still a disturbing film. There's still no answers at the end. And that's what I really like about his films. And this was no different. It's black and white. It's set in Germany in 1913. There's strange goings-on throughout. Most of the time, you don't know who's doing it. And by the end, like a lot of his films, you're still left wondering what's going on. And that's what's great about his films. You're always left with your own thought. Of, he doesn't tell you what's happened.
I was going to say, he's not a preaching storyteller, is he?
No, I mean, I suppose you could say Funny Games is probably his most famous one. He's preachy. Yeah, I don't think that. I think that's one. I mean, as good as that film is, I think that's one of his films that never worked how he wanted it to work.
Yeah.
Because it's attractive. The audience he was trying to tell this is wrong didn't get that. They just enjoyed the things he was showing you should not enjoy.
Yeah.
So as good as that film was, I don't think that's one of the films where it was, like you said, he's not normally preaching. That one probably was.
Mm.
And that's the one that probably never got across the message.
What was White Ribbon? Because I remember seeing a couple of trailers for it, and I actually, even seeing the trailers, I was a bit confused about what the film was actually about. So if you could, can you sum it up for people who probably haven't seen it?
It's set just before World War One. It's narrated by a guy who's now old, and he's thinking back to what life was like in this village in Germany just before World War One broke out. And there's the main guy that lives in this village. It's a very Christian village, kind of Protestant. There's a group of kids that go around, and you get the sense that they're up to something. There's properties damaged, there's a fire. You never know who's doing all this. You get shown clips where you think it must be them, they'll be doing it because of this. But you never know, and he's thinking back. He's known that Germany went into war after this. And was this what Germany was? Were the kids that were violent because Germany was going into war? But you don't get any answers at the end. You just watch it and you sense all this from it.
Mm. Yeah, I remember watching... here I go again. I've totally forgotten what film of his I watched. The other one.
Cash.
Yes. Cash. There you go. Thank you. I watched that and I got that very same sense that he was just explaining what happened. Yeah, that's what you felt, rather than, or what was happening, rather than setting up a story from a particular point of view. And I really enjoyed that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, that film opens wonderfully as well. We went on like 2010. I just love the way he films things. The way he's not showing you something, he's filming something that you've got to then watch and look for. Rather than saying, this is it, watch this is important. You've got to try and work out what he's telling you.
Yeah.
Well, not what he's telling you, he shows you something and then you can decide what it is you're seeing.
Yeah.
You get that in this film.
Cool. So that was your film of 2010, your top film.
Yeah,
I did force you to rank them. I must apologize.
No, that would have been, number one was not hard. That would have been number one.
Yeah. And it's interesting, I don't often rank them, but I thought you guys would have, so I did. And then it came on, you guys hadn't ranked them. So I forced you to do it in a very short time. Okay, we're going to slip over to Mark in a kind of slippy, slidey kind of way and find out what his top film of 2010 was.
Okay, my top film of 2010 was Whip It.
No.
Saw it on my birthday and loved it, and saw it again at the cinema, loved it even more. Just thought it was a great film, loads of heart.
Mm.
Really well directed, great performances turned in by everybody involved, but obviously Ellen Page sticks out along with Drew Barrymore. and Juliette Lewis. I just thought it was a magic film.
Yeah.
Really did. And I went, I took my sister to see, and she's 20 years younger than me. And I saw it for my 40th birthday. And I connected with the mother and father figure, and my sister connected with the actual girls kind of doing the roller derby. And I thought a film that works on two levels like that got my vote any day of the week.
And what did you think of the filming of the actual roller derby section? Did that not lower the film slightly for you?
It did. I thought, you know, that wasn't punchy enough, and it didn't kind of capture the aggression and the action fantastically well. Yeah. But saying that, I thought the rest of the film made up for that in spades.
Yeah.
Absolutely made up for it in spades. And, you know, the only thing that kind of guts me about it is that it wasn't seen by more people.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting, because I saw that at the Glasgow Film Festival, and I think, I don't know why that's not on my list, because I loved that film. So I don't know why I've not written up here. I think I gave it a 4 out of 5, and I've only put up my 5 films. But yeah, Whippet was, I really enjoyed Whippet. I loved it. It was a story about people, really about people. And there was nothing else to distract you. I mean, there's loads of stuff happening, but it, as you said, it had loads and loads of heart. And it just didn't fall.
And, in a year when there's, you know, Seth Rogen comedy upon Seth Rogen comedy and American Pie knockoffs, this was a film which I just thought just connected with people, and it connected with me, and I thought it was just fantastic. And it must be a teenage film, I guess, but it was leaps and bounds above anything else that I'd seen.
I don't think so. And there's something else there I'm going to see, and I don't mean this to suggest that you unfairly put it at number one. I don't mean this at all. But I think there's something about the experience of going to the cinema that always elevates a film as well. So you saw it on your birthday. So that's a bit more meaningful for you. I saw a film festival, and there were roller derby girls there. One of the Glasgow roller derby teams were there in full kit at the front for the start of the film. And that just stands out in my head as just being, that's so cool. And that raised a little, it gave it sort of an extra element to the watching of it. And I think stuff like that does stick out and help build it up. And usually quite rightly, because if it's a bad film, that's not going to help. But if it's a good film, it does.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's my pick of the year. And cool. It was quite a way ahead in front of a couple of the films as well, which surprised me when I came to kind of sit down and think about it.
Yeah. Cool.
So,
all right, let's try a number two spot with us all in. I'm going to start off. Let's go to Stephen, find out what his number two was to start with.
Oh, number two. I Am Love, an Italian film with Tilda Swinton.
I think I've heard of that. But you're going to have to tell me the plot again, because
The plot now is so long ago. It's just this upper-class Italian family that I think their wealth came from some kind of manufacturing or whatever, like textile manufacturing family. And it was about the mother of the family, and the kids had all grown up and they were leaving home. I can't remember, her husband was ill. She has an affair with one of her son's mates, and it's just about this family that crumble a little.
Sounding really cheery so far.
I like films that, I don't need action, I just like films will wash over me and they'll just fly by no matter how much dialogue there is and how little action there is. And this is one of those films that just flowed over me. I really enjoyed, which was really good. And it was really well acted by Tilda Swinton as well. I mean, it was in Italian. Let me check. Yes, it was in Italian.
And was she speaking Italian?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think she'd been doing it for years. I don't know if there's anything.
Is she like
to make this film with this Italian, either the director or the writer, for a few years? I just got a message.
Yes. So did I, and to me that Cuddly bear has a whole different connotation, especially when mixed with a bondage muscular arm.
Well, that was. I never saw it on the actual.
I'm very confused. Anyway, those are Skype icons that just popped through from Mark. Anyway,
I
think she's reading about that film, actually. Sorry,
Pardon? No, go on.
No, you go on.
Yeah, the guy that directed this, I think him and Tilda Swinton have been planning this film for years.
Yeah.
I don't know if she got time in the end to do it and where she learned Italian. I don't know if she's lived in Italy.
Yeah, but I wonder if she's a bit like Kristen Scott Thomas, who we all assume is just British, but actually she's been living in France for all this time. She was born, in fact, I think she might have been born in France. Not sure. Somebody will look that up in IMDb. But she might be still like that, you know. She's not always.
Just like the way there's no mention of any Italian history. Maybe she just learned what she had to say.
Perhaps.
But anyway, that's my number two.
It's a nice number two. And she is going to be one of the people can run in the Edinburgh Film Festival this year.
Yeah, that's right. But did she not do something last year or the year before with, I forget his name, where they drove around the Highlands of Scotland with a giant screen?
That wasn't to do the Edinburgh Film Festival. That was just something they did anyway. And although we like to diss banks and bankers, the Royal Bank of Scotland has been funding a big truck with a screen on it that goes around small towns and villages around Scotland that don't have a cinema for quite some time. And I witnessed that somewhere on the West Coast. I was in a tiny wee village and we saw the screen appear and it was pretty darn amazing. When you see it, this big arctic appears and the sides pull out and just come down the ground. And then suddenly this LED sign appears on the side and shows you what's going to be shown at what time. And you can look in the, peer in the back and there's a proper cinema. Rows of seats and a big screen and it's fantastic.
It's on your Flickr stream, isn't it? Because I've seen that, and I was like, that is just a genius idea.
It is, and it was just so clever. We watched them set up. Because the thing, in this Arctic, you're going to have, what, two seats side by side? And the sides just expand and spread out and then come down, and yeah, really cool. but they do they do a lot of good stuff. A lot of people diss, not her, but the guy, I can't remember his name now,
Cousins.
Reviewer. Yeah, Mark Cousins. But they do a lot of good stuff. They did that cinema Nairn where you just came in and you took whatever you wanted to either hand over to the people around the cinema or to give to the fellow audience members. And they allowed you in to watch the film. As long as you took something along, you could just go in and watch the film. And they're going to do that for the festival as well. Not all the cinema screens, obviously. But they're going to have a couple where it's just you just take along whatever you want as a sort of payment. Anyway, totally sidetracked. So that was your number two, Tilda Swinton. Mark, what's your number two?
My number two is Winter's Bone.
Ah, cracking film.
Brilliant film. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was a million miles away from what I thought it would be. And I went in there prepared to be disappointed almost because all the reviews I'd read had been universally good. And when that happens, it's it usually leads to disappointment. But it just blew me away. I thought it was a great movie. And the lead performance was just stunning. Whoops. The lead performance was just stunning. And, yeah, beautifully shot, really, really great indie film. So
absolutely, and again, I can't believe this. I'm going to agree with you. I wouldn't say it's my number two, but it's definitely on my top list because I saw it at the Edinburgh Film Festival. I was really pretty ill for the festival, and I only saw a couple of screens before I had to come home to my bed. But some really nice people there sent me over some DVDs, and one of them was Winter's Bone, and I sat down thinking, this isn't really what I wanted to see. This is going to be rubbish. And it was the lead performance, and I can't remember her name right now, but a lead performance that just took me and drew me into that film. And she powered me through it. It was really, really good.
Yeah, she's Jennifer Lawrence, she's called.
Yeah, that's it. And she's going to go into big things. She's already had quite a good number of roles out of that.
Yeah.
Stephen, Stephen, that's a film you would really like.
Yeah, I mean, I've not seen many at all this year. I was hoping I'd catch a few more before we did this, but that and the other one Matt mentioned, Whip It. And yeah. So all three have been on my list so far of what I want to watch.
Yeah, I'd really see Winter's Bone as a film that would appeal to you as well as us.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. It's got that Stephen Orrell sentimentality to it, and that's not in a kind of cheeky chintzy way. That's in, you know, quite sincere, you know, great performances and you know, real fine attention to detail, I thought.
Mm.
So, yeah, it just blew me away. Absolutely blew me away.
It's a shame.
That's my number.
And it's a shame that didn't get much more notice, as you said about the previous one as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go into my number two now. This is where I visibly duck. Inception.
That's been stuck in my throat. Come on.
Ignore it and it was number four. Why was it number two?
I loved it. I really enjoyed it. It was a huge cinematic experience. And add to that, I really enjoyed the clever aspects of the story. There's something I always say about cinema, and I've said it before I even started writing on Film Stalker. I said, when you leave a cinema or you leave the room you've just watched the film in, if you're thinking about your tea or something, having some tea or you're going to make a cup of tea, that's the film's just been a waste of time. If you're still thinking about the film, like 5, 10, 20 minutes after that, then and it's been a huge success. And that film stuck with me for, I think, 2 days I was still thinking about it. Thinking about some of the clever twists and some of the questions posed and what the visuals meant and particularly that ending. It probably stuck with me the longest out of any film I've seen this year.
Okay, I'll reply if I may, sir. I saw it expecting something that was going to blow my mind, and you know, I love Christopher Nolan. I think he's just an absolute genius. But although, you know, for all bells and whistles and all of the great special effects,
sorry, Mark, can I just stop you there? Somebody's got a phone very close to their computer. If they could move it away. I think it was Stephen. There we go. Sorry, Mark, go on.
It's not you. I'm sure it wasn't mine, but you never know.
But I thought for, you know, all of its special effects, all of its bells and whistles, the film just wasn't half as clever as it thought it was. That was my big beef with it. The performances were fine. You know, DiCaprio was great, yada, yada, yada. But it just didn't float my boat. The best film he's done so far is The Prestige, I think. And this fell somewhat short of that. So I was, you know, I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was crap by any stretch, but it was certainly my biggest disappointment of the year.
Oh well.
Because I went in there expecting to have my socks blown off,
yeah.
And I thought it was a good film, but nothing more.
Yeah, I'd agree with it being the disappointment of the year. I mean, I'd heard it had been hyped so. I mean, everybody seems to love it, and it's not a bad film, and the acting really is good. Ellen Page, particularly. Although I don't think there was any bad performance. And some of it was good. I just thought he seemed to set up scenes just because he'd had this idea of, well, I could do this on CGI, I can get this to do this. And the story seemed at times built around that. And we've all had crazy dreams, so even the concept wasn't. I just thought everything seemed to be contrived.
That's interesting. I never had those feelings at all about the film, and I was thoroughly engaged start to finish, and it had me thinking a lot about the story and what it meant for some of the characters, and I was going in wildly different directions. I thought the CGI really complemented the film. Performances were great, and I loved the way it all ended, and the fact that it didn't, as you said earlier, Stephen, it doesn't say, right, this is the ending, this is what happened. It goes, you know, here's what we think happened. Here's what you see happening, but it may not be what actually happened. And then when I start to think about that, that permeated through a lot of the film for me, and then posed other questions when I started to think back. So I really enjoyed that. I really liked the fact it made me think.
Have you rewatched it, Richard, by any chance?
I haven't, and I want to, because I came up with this idea that nobody else seemed to have. But so you guys have both seen it, but you remember the scene where he goes into... Is he in India, I think? And he goes into the one of these dream rooms, and it's the biggest amount of people ever. And he wonders, how can you hold together a dream that with so many people? He says, oh, I'll show you. And then he decides to go in to see how he does it with all those chemicals. You know, he injects different chemicals to get him in a deep level so he can dream this kind of very difficult dream with all these different people. He does that, and it just clicked to my mind. From here on in, we're inside his dream. And I seem to think that really stuck out as a scene for me, that everything from that point was in his head. And maybe I just got that differently from other people, and that made the film more interesting to me. But I kept thinking that. So yeah, I'm keen to rewatch it to try and understand that point.
All the way from this dream. Does that not mean the rest of the film meant nothing?
Well, no, it meant nothing, because it was the story about his dream.
Yeah, see, I mean, this isn't the problem I have with it. I mean, it's not necessarily clever. It's just, I can do what I want because it's a dream, so it doesn't need to be real. And it could ignore certain things. You could just say, well, I can do this because it's a dream. And that's probably what annoyed me most with it. I mean, it was just, he was trying to be clever so he could do things throughout the film.
Okay. Right, so Christopher Nolan, please note, you should be clever in your next film.
No, I never said he was clever. I said he was trying to be clever. He can be clever.
He wasn't actually clever. He was just trying to be clever.
Right.
All right. Okay. Right, third place. We're going to go for third place next. Mark can kick off with third place.
Third place. It's got to be Toy Story 3. What can I say? I laughed. I cried. A perfect film. And with it, you know, it's the perfect trilogy. Better than Lord of the Rings. Better than The Godfather. Better than...
Ooh.
Alien 1, 2, 3.
Oh my.
There's not a missed beat in the film, nor in any of the films. It was great. It was just ace. And you know what? I took my daughter to see it, Scarlett, and she loved it. And for a 4-year-old to sit through a film that's nearly 2 hours long, just spoke volumes. And yeah, I cried at the end. You know, like a baby.
What
yeah. can you say?
Yeah, well, actually, that's my number 1, 2, 3, 4. That's my fifth.
Right.
And I had a problem with that. I wasn't sure whether to put fourth or fifth or third, actually. I struggled a bit with that. But yeah, I agree. It's the you couldn't have got a more perfect ending to that trilogy. And the way it spoke to the audience at the end, because that very end is all about the audience. And how the Toy Story, how they've gone with the Toy Story films and how they've grown up with them and how they love them and how you get that interaction, that affection for the characters. That ending was all about that. It wasn't about anything else to do with the film. And the scene, I'm trying to think how can I describe it without giving it away if nobody's seen it? The scene of peril, let us say.
Yeah,
really surprised me about how perilous it became, and how, for a Toy Story film, how dark it went, and that's when things started to go downhill for me emotionally. That is not for the film.
Yeah,
but yeah, I started from that point.
I mean, I saw it probably 2 or 3 weeks after it had come out, and everybody had said to me, "Oh, you're going to cry at the end. You're going to cry at the end." And I actually thought we got to the scene of peril. It was going to be the end. I was like, "Oh yeah, this is fine. This, you know, not emotional at all." And it wasn't until you go past that and actually get to the ending proper that, you know, you end up blubbing. But I don't think it was about the Toy Story characters at all. I thought it was about, you know, putting away your toys and growing up. But somebody else said to me that they saw it as, In fact, it's about kind of dealing with your children when they leave home. Because you still love them, but you've got to let them go.
I don't think we grow up because we become the other child as well.
Mm.
That's interesting. Aaron seems to be taking something different away from that.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is a mark of a good film as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I have to say, it's got the scariest baddie in it I've ever seen, and that's the monkey with the cymbals.
Oh.
Yeah.
See when he screams and the cymbals. I think if I wasn't 40, I would have freaked out in that.
Yeah.
If I'd been 39, I think I would have just cried and run out at that point.
Gave your legs out of the cinema. Yeah. There you go. That was number three for me.
It would have been in my top five as well. And I've seen it a few times. I have a 2-year-old. And it's his favourite film now. But it was until yesterday, Finding Nemo seemed to... He keeps screaming for fish right now. But he loved it. And the peril scene, he would not go near our fire.
Well, that's good. It's educational as well.
He really... That scene, I thought we were going to have to turn it off. Because he was moving backwards. Yeah, he was happy with it as well. I mean, it's just a great film.
Yeah.
42-year-olds and 2-year-olds.
I think everyone behind that film should be so proud of what they've done.
Yeah. Do you think it'll get the Best Picture Oscar?
Oh, I think it's close, but I don't think... You know, what you've got to realise is the Oscars are not so much about what is best. There's so many more things behind that. I think it was pure and unadulterated and about the whole world cinema, then it may well do. But genuinely, I don't think it will.
I think it should.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will, which is a great shame.
Yeah.
Why should that? I'm just being. If your favourite film was Whip It, why would you not think that should get the Oscar?
Because I think. It's a good question, that. I think, you know, looking at what Toy Story's done, and that this is, you know, it's that end of the run Oscar, isn't it? Like, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You know, it's that end of the run type thing, and it's changed cinema. I like it or loathe it. You know, CGI animation is now, you know, the 10 to the penny. But it's interesting that it's only Pixar that do them amazingly well. You know, it's only they that understand the story and the character development that kind of makes Toy Story 3 work. And I think for that alone, they should by rights get the Best Picture Oscar.
Yeah. So there's two things there for me. One thing is the ongoing habit of the Oscars to award a film the glory for a trilogy or a series of films. And I don't think that's right. So Lord of the Rings did that, didn't it? Am I right in saying that Lord of the Rings didn't really win anything till the last film? Then it won lots.
That's right, yeah, it swept the board. So, I think it picked up a few, like best editing and sound editing and stuff.
So are they saying that the first two films weren't that great, but the last film was amazing? No, they weren't. What they were saying was the whole trilogy was great. Well, you know, you're doing an Oscars every year. You're awarding films every year. It should be based on the films that year. If you're going to do something else that's based over a trilogy or over a series of years, then have a special award for it. Don't do Best Picture for that year or Best X for that year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they don't do that. So the only way that you can kind of deal with that is to give them the Best Picture Oscar. And I understand where you're coming from, but for me, it kind of makes a bit of sense.
What I feel is that then they're belittling the first two when they do something like that. Especially, you can see that example, Lord of the Rings. What they should have done is then decided, do you know what? We should have an award for best completion of a trilogy, or a best trilogy, or best franchise, or best series, whatever. And they created that and started awarding that, because that would have gone to Toy Story without a doubt for the completion of that film.
I think what will be interesting next year is it's the last Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And how will that work? You know, because that's been surely the most successful run of films ever.
Well, that last one will win loads of awards, more than anybody else.
There you go.
Whether you've got a decent film out that year or not, well, if you have, woe is you, because you'll be swamped over by Harry Potter award fever.
Yeah.
But when have, without sounding like an Oscar apologist, when have they, other than Lord of the Rings, picked a film because it was the third in a trilogy?
That's a really good point, Stephen.
Well, that's a good point, but I haven't researched properly. I'm sorry. But they do this a lot, and especially see it with actors and actresses.
Yeah.
You get a Best X award for being old. You know, that's it. You do. If you're an old actor who's done quite a few films, you'll get a Best award. Wait a minute. What about his best films he did, or her best films they did during their career? Doesn't matter. You know, you're 80. You might not make another film. Let's give you an award just now for whatever you just did this year. While I do think they deserve that recognition, that's not what that award is about. It's about the best of that year, and there's loads of things missing out because of that. Anyway, this isn't really about Toy Story. It's just I got sidetracked on the Oscars. Oh, the other thing I was going to say was about Pixar. And the perfect example of how Pixar can do it so well is WALL-E. You watch that first 10-15 yeah. minutes of just the character that Pixar have done, because they create all these character pieces anyway to sell a film. And it's awesome. And then you watch the rest of it by Disney, and it's good, but it's not as good as that opening 10-15 minutes. So my third film of 2010 is going to be another one you're probably going to rip shreds out of me for, but I'm going to say Tron Legacy. For a film that was a sequel to an 80s classic, it really did manage to capture what that film was about, update it, without harming the original, and also bring so much more to it. And also, one of the big things that made me surprised about this film is that it didn't turn out like the Hollywood action CGI epic I thought they were trying for. And there's a lot more of the story that was understated, a lot was left unsaid. There weren't great explanations in dialogue or visuals. A lot of it was just, you know, this character's done that. We'll give you a couple of 2-second scenes to explain why that character's done that, and you'll know it. And that's that. Let's move on. So I think it was a lot more grown up than the original, but it kept those ties to it. And I really enjoyed the story, really enjoyed the performances. There were a few gaps in it that I wasn't quite sure about, but I really enjoyed it all in all. Yeah.
I'll jib in on that one.
Cool.
I've not seen it. And the reason I've not seen it is it's on at the IMAX in Manchester. And every time I've tried to see it, the screening's been sold out.
Ah.
And it's a film I really, really want to see at the IMAX. And I want to see it at the IMAX for a couple of reasons. One is I saw it, you know, Tron at the Flicks as a kid, and it blew me away.
Yeah.
The second one is all the stuff I've seen, including the trailers, just looks amazing.
Yeah.
And the third one is the soundtrack's by Daft Punk.
Mm.
And I think I've bought the soundtrack, and it sounds just great. So I think that those three things combined, it's got to be a winner.
I've got to tell you, the soundtrack is awesome, and it does. The film's got a whole darker feel and a more foreboding feel than the original. It's got more weight to it, and I really like that. And that's really helped by that score. But one of the things I thought was, okay, so we all know how Hollywood behaves. We know how Hollywood treats films. Okay, so they're going to do a sequel to Tron. It's all going to be about the light cycles. It's going to be huge, epic 3D CGI battles with that. It's going to take up most of the film. And I'm not spoiling anything by saying this, but it doesn't. They're in there. All those things are in there. But there's so much more to the story. And that's the concentration of the story. It does fall down in a couple of key places. But all in all, it's amazing in this day and age in Hollywood to be able to produce a sequel like that and still tie in with the original. I loved it. Loved it. And Stephen's not going to say anything because he hasn't seen that, obviously.
I'm not saying nor do I want to. I know I won't like it. I think, like I said earlier, I mean, people love Sex and the City too. I'm never going to enjoy that. And I think Tron fits into another category of type of film that just doesn't interest me. I've seen trailers for it and it just doesn't appeal. It's definitely not for me.
Hmm. Okay. Let's go to Stephen for number three.
My number three will be... And I really didn't want to pick a third foreign film.
But you did.
But, well, I didn't see many films last year, so I chose wisely. So my third
Stephen,
film
I'm
is...
going to say something here. Stop apologising for the fact that you watch non-mainstream films.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why we have you here, is that... I mean, it's not for your good looks or anything. It's
well, luckily the video's only in the corner.
It's because because you had some... I don't know if the right word is balance, but you know, you pull things off in a different direction as well, so don't apologise for it. It's great.
Okay. Jackass 3D.
Oh, dear God.
You are the man.
No, really. I mean... As I said when I mentioned the Haneke film, I mean, that kind of film really does, is the kind of film I like. But I've never laughed as much in the cinema as when I watched Jackass 3. I love all the Jackass films, and as much as people have been watching thrillers and things blow up, cinema isn't necessarily the escape it is for me, as it is for a lot of people, because of what I watch, and it's just like another life. Jackass 3 was a scare. I mean, it was in 3D. I mean, I'm not bothered about 3D, but when you see a giant dildo coming straight at your ass, there's something funny about it. And Jackass 3D really was a scare cinema for me. And I've never laughed out loud like I did watching that. I loved it. There was nothing wrong with Jackass 3D. I knew what it was when I went there, and they gave me just what I was expecting. So my third film is Jackass 3D.
Good lad. Okay. I saw the flakes. Yeah, I thought it was great. It is. It does exactly what it says on the tin. A load of people being hit in the knackers, bodily fluids kicking around, all in glorious 3D, brilliant. But it's not the best 3D film I've seen this year.
No, I mean, I didn't think it was better because it was in 3D. It 3D, and I don't think 3D adds anything to a film. 3D, 2D. You don't. At times, 3D can be a distraction. You're thinking, well, that looks good, and you're missing what they're actually showing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been in 3D. Jackass 3 was really, really good.
Mm.
The other thing I find about 3D, and you'll see this in Tron Legacy, is that because you're watching the film, you're caught up in the story and everything, you actually forget you're watching 3D, and it just becomes 2D. 90% in that film, I look back and think, I say, while I was watching it, I was thinking, you know, there's nothing in here that particularly looks 3D to me. Because you just, you know, you just get on with the film, you forget all about it.
Yeah.
Waste of time. But
I mean, the best 3D film I saw this year was Piranha 3D. It was, you know, same as Jackass, did exactly what it said on the tin. Lots of flying fish, lots of fish eating people, loads of boobs. Brilliant.
Boobs in 3D.
Yeah, just great. You know, didn't pretend to be highbrow, didn't pretend to have millions spent on it. It was just a good, fun film, you know. What can you say? Didn't try too hard, didn't take yourself too seriously, much the same as Jackass. So it's, yeah, that was a winner, you know. Two of the most unlikely 3D films, I think, have kind of come out on tops for me this year, for 3D wise.
Because Stephen doesn't have any more than three. Let's sum up with our films we'd like to mention.
Okay.
Stephen, why don't you go first, since you forced us into this corner?
Well, you don't get a medal for fourth and fifth, so a top three is perfect.
You do so a film stalker.
You do. You did. There was a French prison film, A Prophet, that was really good. And anybody looking at the DVD in HMV or some other high street DVD sales, ignore the advertising slogan. I'm trying to think what it says now. It's something I should have. Well, I never thought I was going to be next.
You don't want time to prepare again, so you can totally change the film you've chosen, do you?
No.
Again.
Again. Just explain this to everyone, because I think, well, I'll now have to edit most of the previous one out, is that we went to Stephen for his third choice before my third choice. He chose A Prophet and then stumbled, kind of, over what the plot was, reducing Mark and I to physical tears of laughter. And then would decide to go with me first so he could have time to think up. So when we went back to him, he chose Jackass.
Which wasn't the wrong choice. That
was just different from the first one.
The Jackass was a word in number three. A prophet, I've got it now. And it says on the DVD, Scarface meets the Godfather, an instant classic. And the two of the last films I would think of saying for a prophet was Scarface and the Godfather.
Hmm.
But that doesn't mean it's not a good film. A poor North African ends up mixing up with the Corsican mafia. He does a few jobs with them. He kills a guy. This guy starts coming back to him in flashes. And at one point, he saves his life in a car crash. And that is the prophet side of it. And I think that at the time led me thinking something else. It's just a really good prison film.
Mm.
That's another choice I could have had. There's I love The Road, which was released in December 2009. Which means by the time you get to see it, it's January, February 2010. The Road, I really enjoy The Road. I like end of the world films. And The Road does end of the world really well.
There's a song that sums up what The Road means for me. The road is long. That's all you need to know. I read the book and it's painful. You might as well pull teeth incredibly slowly out of your gob. The punctuation is gone. The paragraphing is gone. And it just, it feels like when you're reading, it's just going, and then he walked down the road, and then he walked, and then and this, and then and that, and then that.
But the film was not the book. I mean, the film...
Well, yes.
...doesn't last that long. And
good.
I mean, it's a good, really good end of the world film. Well
worth I'm with Stephen here. I thought it was really good. Wasn't the best end of world film I've seen this year, but it was, you know, I've only seen two, but it was second. I thought it was great, and I have to say, I thought the way it was shot was fantastic. I thought it was really, really well done. I really enjoyed it.
All right, I mean, another thing I enjoyed this year was Mick Max, the guy that did Amelie. It's, if you enjoyed Amelie, you'll love Mick Max. It's Danny Boone is a French. I think he's a French comedian that does a really good job in it as well. His performance is really good. It's almost, I think it's Pixar without the animation in a lot of his films. Mick Max reminded me of that. It's almost animation without a single drawing in it. It's really good. And that's it for films I thought were really good.
So, in 1, 2, 3, fourth place would have been The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo for me, because I really enjoyed that thriller. As I said before, I am a huge fan of thrillers. I think it's one of the best genres of cinema. And that was really well done. Really complex stories woven together well. Some really dark stories as well. I'm not convinced Fincher can bring anything better to it. But I think he'll just make it look darker and feel darker. He'll give it the feel of Seven, for example. But much the same story. I don't know if he will be able to do it any much better than it was. Anybody see Dragon Tattoo?
Yeah, I saw it and loved it, and I thought that the casting of the two leads was brilliant.
Mm.
And I honestly don't see how Finch is going to top that.
Yeah.
Because they lived and breathed those characters, and, you know, if you read the book, the mental pitch is there, and they nailed it.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be his biggest obstacle.
The sequel, interestingly, was not good in comparison.
Yeah, but that was straight to video, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it Sweden, I think?
Yeah, I think it was a TV film, and interestingly, I remember watching the pictures and complaining, because the second we got a cinematic format for the first one, and the second one came on straight afterwards, and it went to a TV format. And I was like, "What's the? They've messed about with the formats." So I went to complain. It appears that that's the format they had it. Anyway,
yeah.
Next in fourth place would have been Toy Story 3. We talked about that. Fifth place would be Social Network. I don't know why the Oscars, all these awards, are going so mad about it just now. Good film, but I don't know, it just didn't quite get me. I think the biggest issue I find was, something that's a real bugbear with me, is films about true events. And are they really, is the film portraying it as a true event, or making it up its own events, or is this portrayal of the person the real thing, or have they changed things, you know? And there wasn't a sense of what was real and what was not, and that bothers me quite a lot. No, it was a good film, but it wasn't great, I think. Notable mentions on top of that. I'm going to chuck in Jack Boots on Whitehall. I don't know if either of you guys have seen that.
No, it's on my list.
No, but I've read your review for it, and I really want to see it. And I've struggled to find, A, either somewhere where it's on, or B, a DVD copy to buy.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think it's struggling to get distribution, and it's such a good film. It really is good fun. I loved it. Another one I'm going to mention, I think people have written off all too eagerly because of very bad marketing, is Night and Day. That was hilarious fun. Really good. And you guys have been talking about it. It does what it says on the tin. That's exactly what Night and Day did. Delivered a good fun action adventure that poked a lot of fun at the two lead actors, as well as some of the films they've been in, particularly Tom Cruise. I like that. Mark's looking disgusted.
Yeah, I thought it was atrocious. I thought it was one of the worst films I've seen this year. I almost had to check my brain in at the cinema door.
Oh, I don't understand.
Self-congratulatory wankathon for Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz. I thought it was bloody awful.
I thought it was really funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my wife and I really enjoyed it. In fact, at the screening, there was I was surprised how many people were laughing. You know, for a British audience at 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning, there was a hell of a lot of people laughing out loud.
Maybe they were drunk from the night before.
Maybe they were, but they didn't seem the type of people that were. I certainly wasn't, because I had to drive. The Cove, I saw The Cove on DVD. I don't know if it was released last year, but that's a harrowing and moving film that really has changed. I know it sounds contrived, but it has changed my life. I don't eat certain types of fish now, and I'm very aware of what Japan is trying to do with whaling, and I think it's pretty damn evil. And after you see that film, you know, you're going to get moved, whatever. I can't really say much about it. You've really got to see it. It's a fantastic documentary, and it's very touching.
Yeah, I saw it this year. Thought it was great.
Mm.
Touching, I'd say disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like flying over to Japan and giving them a piece of my mind, because I just thought what they were doing was atrocious, but, you know. Great, great movie.
No excuse for that kind of stuff. No, and it's so absolutely. Well edited as well, I've got to say. And again, halfway through, it's kind of like a thriller. You know, it's being edited like a thriller, actually, rather than a documentary. Like that.
Yeah.
Monsters, Gareth Edwards. Loved that film. And Mark, is that a grimace of, no, I don't agree with you, or I haven't seen it?
It's a grimace of no. I thought it was a great film. And I went expecting... I went to see another film expecting a film of the same calibre because of the way it had been hyped. And it was the worst film I saw of the year, because I thought Monsters was brilliant, but I thought Skyline was a pile of tonk.
Mm.
And that's putting it mildly. I thought it was atrocious.
Oh, dear.
I actually thought it was filmmaking at its worst.
Oof. I haven't seen Skyline. I really wanted to, but... it's
terrible.
Okay.
Absolutely terrible.
Mind you, I'll probably love it.
Yeah.
It's a hilarious film. I love Tom Cruise in it. No, but Monsters, Gareth Edwards' Monsters is really good, and it's very, very clever, and it's definitely not what you expect. And he's definitely not the director I'd expect to be doing Godzilla.
No, but what a golden opportunity to do something different.
Yeah, and I hope that is. I hope that is. I hope the studio execs haven't just seen this and gone, oh, Monsters, seen the last, 5 minutes? And gone, that's the guy to do Godzilla. I hope they've seen the rest of the film and thought, this is a clever view. This is something intelligent. This has captured audience imagination. Let's change Godzilla.
Yeah.
We'll see. Two more to go. Don't worry. American, The Bill Hicks Story. It's a brilliant documentary about Bill Hicks, the comedian. And it's done by a photo montage style. So they've got all these old photos of him. And while they're talking about, people are being interviewed talking about him, some of his closest friends and family, they're using the photos to tell the story in a kind of film format. It's beautifully done. And it's a wonderful story, and hilarious and moving at times as well. And finally, I'm going to say Going the Distance. It's another queer look from Mark. Have you not seen that, Mark?
No, I've not seen it.
It's the Justin Lin and... Is it Justin Lin? No, he's...
Justin Long and Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, Justin Lin's Fast and Furious.
I want to see it.
Yeah, it's really good. And it just seems so natural. The script writing's wonderful. It's very... You can easily connect with it because my wife and I certainly connected with a lot of it and realised that it's just the writing so intelligent. It's about real people and real situations, and they behave in a way you can actually identify with for a change. And the dynamics between the two leads are fantastic because they are probably, it's put down a lot to the fact that they are going out with each other, or were at the time. Brilliantly scripted and brilliantly performed. I loved it. Right, that's me. I'm done now. All right, Mark.
Okay, I'm gonna pick two or three out, I think, from my list. I think the first one is going to be Four Lions.
Oh.
Because I was really looking forward to it. And I was expecting a laugh-out-loud comedy. And what I got was a comedy that I loved where it didn't laugh out loud.
Mm.
I thought it was just so well done, so well observed. I thought Chris Morris was a brilliant director and writer, and I just couldn't fault it. It looked like it cost about £12 to make, but that just added to its charm. And it certainly had quite a few of the most memorable scenes of the year in it for me. So, yeah, that's the first one I'd kind of recommend.
I would totally agree with you. I will agree with you. I really like that film. Very cleverly written. I love Chris Morris. I love the way he always says you should laugh at the things that scare you or threaten you or whatever. And I totally agree with that. Anything that's serious in life, if you laugh at it, it makes you feel better. It makes everything lift up.
Yeah.
And that's very true of Four Lions and what it did. Yeah, brilliant. Well written.
Mm. So that was one. The second one out of the four is Kick-Ass.
Ah.
Because I just thought it was a hoot. From start to finish, I thought, you know, a young girl saying the C word, a winner all the way. So,
and you as a father seeing that.
I know, can you believe it? It was the closest film I've seen that was like a comic book brought to life. That's the best thing I can say about it. And I just thought it was just great. The other one, which is kind of last two really, it's kind of a couple of guilty pleasures really. One was Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh.
Which I thought had the best premise ever. A hot tub.
Best time machine. Is that all you've got? You had a good idea.
Yeah, that's it. This film.
Yeah, but it had two of my favourite actors in it. One of whom is Crispin Glover. And the other one who is probably the finest actor ever to have stood in front of a film camera, and that's Chevy Chase. So it was the year that Chevy Chase hit the big screen, and for that I'm eternally thankful. So it's that one. And the last one is Cop Out, which was the pairing of Kevin Smith and Bruce Willis, which almost kind of hit it off, but it just wasn't quite there, which I thought was a real shame. I was really disappointed, but I still really, really enjoyed it. So they're kind of my extra four, if you will.
Hmm. Interesting choice. I haven't seen Cop Out or Kick-Ass yet, surprisingly. I haven't seen that.
No.
There's some reason.
Yeah, I think you'd love Kick-Ass.
Yeah, well, yeah. Just before this started, I was looking at the play.com. Oh, there's a good plug for them. They are having a Blu-ray sale just now. And Kick-Ass is going at a ridiculous price on Blu-ray, so I think I'm going to snab that one for myself.
Treat yourself. It stands up to a good few watches as well.
Good stuff. Well, Matthew Vaughn and Jane Goldman are a fantastic writing couple. From Stardust, they had me captured. And I've loved everything they've done since. So cool. Good choices. So
there you go.
So that's our 2010.
There's one quick thing I'd like to mention. Stinker of the year for me.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
It was Wolfman. I mean, that's this thing. I didn't watch it all, and I never stopped watching the film. But I thought Wolfman was atrocious. just the whole setup from the beginning, and I thought, I cannot watch this anymore. So Wolfman was my 2010 stinker.
Okay. Yeah, I would second that. I thought it was shit. That's the only word I can use to describe it. My stinker of the year is Sex and the City 2. Just should never have been made.
I think in Sex and the City 2 defence, you shouldn't have gone watching it. A stinker. So unless you were wearing a dress, you should never have gone.
This is true.
Actually, just to point out the fact, Mark was wearing a dress that day.
I was. It was it was my special Sunday. Well, once a month. No. I just thought it was appalling. And the one film where I had really high expectations for it was Clash of the Titans, and it was just terrible.
Yeah.
So.
Well, my worst. See, I've got a big list, so I'm now going to have to try and pick a couple out of here. I'm going to pick one festival film, which I saw, which was The Last Rites of Ransom Pride. And it was just utterly goddamn awful. Sorry to the people behind making it. And there's a couple of big, decent actors in there. It was, and everyone who watched it was like, what the hell was that all about? Not even worth talking about. And see, I'm so torn between a number of others now. Things like Greenberg, A Serious Man, The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. And The Expendables. Yep.
The Stinkers? The Coen Brothers film?
Yep.
That was amazing. As always with the Coen Brothers film.
Well, if I could have fallen asleep, Phil, I did feel like so.
I mean, in the Coen Brothers' defence, that was a 2009 film. Otherwise, I would have mentioned it in my also around that thing.
Well, to be fair, I saw it in digital release, and I think it was 2010 that it was released digitally.
Although I didn't think it was a really, really good film. I loved The Serious Man. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, in that case, Richard, if we're playing that game, the best film I saw last year was Fletch. Just brilliant.
Well, they were playing that game.
Was it released in some format? Yes, last year.
Yeah, it hit Blu-ray in its for the first time.
Okay, I'll give you that, yeah. That's fair enough.
I'm really joking.
2010.
You're just trying to wind Stephen up.
Fletch was a shocker. But no, I thought The Serious Man was really, really, really good.
I think, thinking about it, I think I'd call it between The Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, and The Expendables. And I think Bad Lieutenant was...
The Expendables was brilliant. Did exactly what it said on the tin.
I was utterly disappointed. They really missed it. If that hadn't been all those actors in it, it hadn't been those action stars in it, rather. See what I did there? If it hadn't been those action stars in there, then I think it would have. I'd have watched that film going, yeah, great adventure, great excitement. But because it was all these action stars together and it had built up to that, it just didn't deliver anything more than going, oh, look, we've managed to get these guys in the same frame for 2 minutes. Isn't that exciting? And look, we've got this guy fighting him. And yet, okay, so that's great, but I want some more meat around it. I want some story. I want some really good action. Although Jason Statham was really good, and he did stand up and slice Stallone well.
I mean, it's not Great Expectations. It's not Shakespeare. It's an action film, bit of fun. And for me, it kind of, you know, healed the wounds of the film that was The A-Team.
But it was built...
Which I was expecting a lot of.
It was built way above that. It was built with all these action stars together, huge, big. Arnie, Willis, Stallone, all these guys together, didn't deliver that.
Instead of watching The A-Team, I'd rather watch Mr. T on a Snickers ad. All I can say about The A-Team.
I can totally disagree with that, because I thought The A-Team did a really good job. I really liked that. Although The Losers did better.
Yes, I'd agree with that, actually.
It's funny that on our favourite films, although we didn't think Inception was great, we didn't mind Inception. So there was no disagreements with our favourite films. We were all happy with the choices. And then as we start mentioning films we really disliked... actually, I thought that was really good, and
I think, because you can easily dislike films, can't you? I don't know. I can't explain that one.
I think what it means is that if it's a good film, then it'll generally be a good film. Whereas if it's a personal choice, it can be liked and disliked for no reason other than personal choice.
Which is good, which is why there are so many films, because there's different films for different folks, isn't there? You know.
Okay, I'm going to... What I'm going to quickly do, because we've gone way over time, but anyway, 3, 6, 7... We're looking at Wikipedia, the list of highest grossing films in the UK. And for 2010, it's only got listed 7 films. The list of the highest grossing films ever in the United Kingdom. And in that list, 7 are from 2010. I'm just going to rattle them off. Toy Story 3, Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 1, brackets, the film that should only be about half an hour to Part 2. Alice in Wonderland, Inception, Shrek Forever After, The Twilight Saga, Eclipse with neutered vampires and werewolves with expandable shorts, and Sex and the City 2, which should never be made as just a repeat of another episode in the series, as was the first film. Sum it up?
Mm. Pretty shocking. The land of the sequels.
It's made for the audience, and the audience, there's a mass audience out there that don't think about what they're watching. They'll just go because it's Saturday.
Stephen, how did you sum it up earlier when we talked about it? You summed it up by categorising the films. Just say that again if you can. Although judging by what you said about The Prophet, I'm not sure if we can. Anyway.
I can't sum up. I think I... the rant about poor people having money to spend.
No. You went. So it's interesting there because 3 of the films are kids. I'll do it for you. 3 of the films are kids' films. 2 are chick flicks. And you, what was it you said about the last one?
For a mass market film.
An overrated director, I think, is what you said of Christopher Nolan. That's Stephen Orell, who lives at.
Yeah, send him round, I'll tell him how to make a film and save a few bob as well.
Yeah, because your version of Inception was awesome, wasn't it?
It was just me sleeping.
When you took this beauty and turned it over at itself, and all the beauty men fell on it, that was just wonderful.
It was
Steve trying to get out of the duvet in the morning.
Okay, so those are our films of 2010. Okay, so thanks for listening to the 2010 Film Stalker Film Club audiocast. And it just remains for me to say happy 2011 film viewing. And we'll see you on Film Stalker.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Quick and painless. Like, here's one, Room in Rome. I saw that recently. It's rather clever, actually. It's really nice. You would like that, Stephen. And it's 8 out of 10.
Which one?
67th on the list, Room in Rome.
I've not watched that yet. But I'm looking forward to watching some porn.
Actually, you'll be a bit disappointed.
Oh, right.
There's like 2 or 3 scenes that are about porn, but it's beautifully filmed. And actually,
yeah, I believe so.
Rather.
That's not porn, then. It's art.
Sorry, what was that?
It's not porn if it's beautifully filmed, it's art.
Yes, Vivid are good at art. Whoever they are, I don't know who.
Vivid.
You've seen they're doing a Superman porn parody.
Yeah, they've done a Wonder Woman one as well, haven't they?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, so I've heard.
It's actually, it's okay on page 1, but you start getting on page 2 and there's dodgy ones.
Yeah. See, the further down the list you go, the more and more decent films you get as the ratings go up.
There's not much. To be honest, I try and be a bit like Stephen as well. I'm not so successful, but I try and hand-pick films, make sure I'm not going to see a dud. And there's not many on that first page I've actually seen. I wanted to see Skyline. Jonah Hex was a bummer.
That's fucking terrible. Last Airbender was shite.
Never saw that. I saw Legion. That was okay.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street was pish.
The best film I watched of the year, including old films, was The Sound of Music.
When is Skype going to sort out three-way video calls?
It has.
Has it?
Pay.
I think you have to pay, yeah. Huh.
You have to pay?
Yeah, for 3-ways. if you do... Sorry.
I'll tell you what, Paul is shaping up to be the film of next year. Without a shadow of a doubt. That new trailer's genius.
I'm hoping you're right. I'm hoping it's just a Hollywood company that's done a average Hollywood trailer.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the trailer's great.
I thought it was quite funny. But Edgar Wright's done the script editing on it, hasn't he?
It's just Seth Rogen puts me off a lot of films.
Yeah.
He epitomises the Hollywood American comedy, which is just all sex and bodily function jokes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just getting old.